we're ready when you are.
May it please the court, my name is Noah Powers, and I represent Mr. Curry in this appeal.
Do you wish to have your...
I do want to reserve about 5 minutes, yes, I could, for rebuttal.
Mr. Powers, can I ask you at the outset how Judge Melvin's alteration of a final sentence is simply void ab initio?
Well, when we... I will go directly to that. Let me just go to the case that I think is most significant here. And when we... When we look at the dicta, and I think we've recited this in our in the brief, in the dicta in the case there where the Commonwealth was relying on this case at trial or at the hearing, and also later, that's the Jacobs case. And in that case, the court held, and this was the holding, it's not the dicta that comes before it, but this was the holding of the court, that we hold that the remaining balance of the appellant's original sentence did not simply disappear, and this is what the Attorney General is saying, it didn't just disappear. When the trial court, in its order of so-and-so date, revoked a portion of his suspended sentence and implicitly resuspended the remainder, what happened here, if you look there at the appendix, the court revoked everything. It didn't just do a portion and then impliedly resuspend. The order there by Judge Melvin was explicit. I'm revoking everything, the whole sentence, and I'm resuspending all the rest of that time. So he did what the Jacobs case says you're not supposed to do. He didn't do what you're not supposed to do. He did what he did, and what he did was he revoked everything. So that is the basis for this, for the Attorney General's position of the void ab initio. And then we get into all this stuff about which rule and all cases on whether it's rule 1-1, 1-13, whatever the rule is here, it's just none of that really applies. The only thing that we look at is what did the judge do and what was he intending to do, which...
But don't we have to also get to what he even had jurisdiction to do? Because I'm at a loss for how he had jurisdiction to completely change a final sentence.
Well, he is able to impose any sentence, and that's what the law says. He can reimpose a sentence that would have been proper.
But he can't change the sentence.
He didn't change the sentence.
If you've got 12 years of 11 years suspended, what you can't do is convert that to 2 years of 1 year suspended. He can simply operate within the framework of the sentence that he had before him.
And that's our position. That's what he was doing. He was operating within that. The man had served...
So where did the rest of the time go if that's what he was doing?
That was all revoked.
Then why isn't he still serving it?
Because he has already served the portion of the 11 months that he was required to serve. He served that period of time now.
But we're dealing with a 12-year sentence, so I think we're kind of talking circles around one another. Again, what I don't think I have an answer to is how Judge Melvin had jurisdiction to change a sentence that was already final.
Well,
can you cite a statute or a case
law? No, I cannot
or anything?
No statute that I can cite.
Okay.
That says that. What he's operating, though, is operating within the confines of what I understand to be the applicable case law, and that was that, unlike in the Jacobs case, he does what I think is the logical conclusion for the bench to say, I can revoke everything, and then I can...
But the revocation applies to the suspended part, doesn't it? If he was revoking the suspended sentence,
I believe it's I'm looking here and it says that the suspension of the sentence and the placing of the defendant on probation, so both are then revoked. All the suspended time is revoked. And he can do that. And then what happens is he reimposes some of the time. He could reimpose the 11 years. He chose not to. But fundamentally, and the reason this is important here, I think, is he could do that within the range of the punishments available. So he then imposes the 11 months rather than all that remaining 11 years because he'd served 3 or 4 of the years. But he does that, and he doesn't just do that in a vacuum. He does that at the request and the concurrence of the Commonwealth's attorney. And that really gets us to the real argument here, which is once the attorney for the Commonwealth agrees that is the right sentence, does the court...
But the Commonwealth cannot confer jurisdiction upon the court to do something it otherwise does not have jurisdiction.
Well, he's trying to confer jurisdiction, don't they? He's just saying, this is what we agree is an appropriate sentence. You make a decision. This is what we're recommending. This is what we want to see happen. And the defendant agrees with that. There's a bargain here. There's a meeting of the minds. And the referee, the court, is now free to accept that or to reject that. Once the court accepts that, this is just the argument from the defendant standpoint. He is now in the position of saying, I have 11 months. Now, he doesn't really care how he gets to 11 months. I'll grant you that. But that's what he has. And because of just the inherent unfairness to him and all the other issues that we raised there, it's not right for him to come in, make an agreement, and then a year and a half later have the Commonwealth say and the court say, well, that agreement doesn't really matter. And that's the point here, that fundamentally it is as a matter of due process and fundamental fairness, it's wrong. All the probation and revocation and suspended sentence, all those statutes, when you get to 306, the whole scheme is rehabilitative. And one of the things that the cases clearly say is the statutes to be liberally interpreted for the purpose of rehabilitation. Here you've got a man with a 14-year sentence, and he's been through this much time, he's been through 3 or 4 years, and then he comes back, and now he gets into a trouble. Now this is his second revocation. This is not the first time he was revoked. So he's been through there. The court is fully aware of this man's circumstance and come to the conclusion this is the right thing to do. Once that happens, we have now moved into a totally different realm, and that is the bargain between Commonwealth and the defendant and the court. This is a three-party agreement, and they've agreed this is what would happen. It would be just inherently unfair, and it's unfair for the reasons that we set forth in the petition and in our brief also, because if you allow the Commonwealth or any of the parties to come in and change their agreement with another party, then the system doesn't make any sense. Under 384, there's an opportunity for the Commonwealth at the very beginning to say, this is not right. He has to get all 11 years, or he has to get whatever. They don't do that. And this is the same attorney that came back in the subsequent, the same Commonwealth attorney handled the case all the way through every stage, the same Commonwealth attorney. So there's not a lack of understanding of what the situation is with this particular defendant. But when you come here and you say 384 never, just doesn't apply to Commonwealth, well, that's just a bad signal. When you say it doesn't matter to them, they don't have to object. They can be a party to something wrong, and then if it comes out later, a year and a half later, that it somehow worked as a benefit to the defendant, that they get to say do-over. Defendant never gets that opportunity. Defendant never gets the benefit of the 21 days. I mean, you know, the defendant doesn't get the benefit of that kind of a rule. And the issue is, as a matter of just how do we want to treat defendants when they come before the courts? Do we want to treat them the same,
Or do we want to treat Dillon in a different way so that there's a different rule applied to Dillon than there is applied to the Commonwealth? And that's really the crux of the matter. Whether or not there's the right of the Commonwealth to confer anything, that's
Council, how do you get past Jacobs and Liedo and the language in those cases that basically say a trial court simply lacks the authority to shorten the original sentence during a revocation hearing?
In the context of this, as I've read in the holding in Jacobs, I think the court, whether or not the court intended to use that language to say what it says, that's what the language says. In the holding, that when you revoke a portion of the sentence, and when you implicitly, not directly, resuspend, and that's not the situation here. So I don't think that Jacob and Liedo are applicable. Now, this, I'm not suggesting that this is a great opportunity for this court to rewrite Jacobs and Liedo so that it's worse for my client. But I'm just suggesting to you that based on that language, I think it's reasonable for the court, the trial court, to say, I didn't just do a portion. I suspended everything. I revoked everything, and then I explicitly, in my order, resuspend. So on that basis, I think that Jacob and Liedo are not controlling in this particular case. I would like to reserve the remaining portion of my time, if I might.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Brandon.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Blanton. I'm here on behalf of the Commonwealth. And I think the real question here is, where is the authority for the court to remove 11 years from the sentence? And there is no authority for that. That is the Commonwealth's position. And if you look at Code Section 192-306, subparagraph C, Section Roman numeral 2, if the trial court finds a defendant has violated the terms of the suspended sentence, the trial court shall revoke the suspension, and the original sentence shall be in full force and effect. The court may again suspend suspend all or any part of the sentence and place the defendant upon terms and conditions of probation. So in other words, when he said you're revoked, the remaining time was in play. There's no authority for him to do that. At that point, this is, 3, 4, 5 years after the final order was entered, Rule 1:1 comes in. That order is done, it's signed, it's final. That's the whole point of Rule 1:1, that you can't go changing the game. And there are plenty of cases in this court's jurisprudence, in the Supreme Court's jurisprudence, where it has worked in effect for a defendant. And if I can bring up a case that's not mentioned on brief, but it's Robertson versus the warden at superintendent of the Barnes Correctional Center, that's 248 Virginia 232. It's a 1994 case. There were a couple of different orders from the court. One court order.
Counsel, have you provided that?
No, I have not. I did not want to read it. I would be happy to provide it. You're welcome. But in that case, the circuit court said, I'm imposing these sentences, said nothing about to run concurrent or concurrently or consecutively, and as you all know, it therefore ran consecutively. He corrected the order to say they were concurrent. When the gentleman violated probation, the court then changed it to say they're running consecutively. The Supreme Court said, you can't do that. The order was final on that second one. You can't do that. So it does work in the defendant's favor. And frankly, if any court could come into revocation and say, well, you've got a year hanging over your head, but the original sentence called for a life sentence, and you've been really bad since you're out, so I'm just going to revoke that sentence and impose what I think is appropriate. The defense counsel would be reasonably upset about that. And I think that's the whole point here. The court acted without authority. It would be nice if we could say that 11 years was implicitly suspended, but the order doesn't allow for that. The order says you've got 1 year and I'm suspending 11 months. The order assumes authority the court did not have, which was to modify the original sentencing order. Therefore, that order is void ab initio. And I think the appropriate thing to do is to send it back to the lower court to actually correct it, because he had, I think, full 12 years. He's been sentenced to 11 months, and 11 years and 1 month now remain upon his sentence, and should get credit for the time served on the previous revocation that is now voided. There are no further questions?
Hearing none. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Powers, rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very briefly, in regard to 19.2306C, looking at that subpart 2, below numeral 2 that the Attorney General has referred to, if the court originally suspends the execution of the sentence, that's not the situation here. The suspended, we have this, this happens not frequently, but it does happen in some degree of regularity in the circuit court where, and I've got a case that just petitioned this court on, in which a man was sentenced, was found guilty, sentence was set off for some period of time, and he's found guilty, he is now convicted, and he is given an appeal bond, and so the imposition of the sentence is actually suspended. That's what we're talking about here. I think that's what this statute is really talking about, is when the sentence is suspended for some reason, like to pursue the appeal, you've got an appeal bond, or if he's found guilty and then it's not being imposed right now because we're going to come back and for some reason we're going to have a pre-sentence report prepared, which is the right of the defendant to do. He couldn't, can't waive that. It happens infrequently, but it does happen. And so that's really what we're talking about here, as to whether or not the sentence is in full force and effect. But this is not, this never happened here. It never occurred that this sentence gets, the execution of the sentence gets suspended. That's not what happened here. What happened here was the time and the probation, everything was revoked. And that's where we really have to come down to. Is that a situation that this court needs to address? I really think that this is a situation the court needs to address and needs to set it right. If you think I'm wrong, and it's apparent that not everyone in this room believes I'm right on Jacob, but if that is the opinion of this court, I think it needs to be expressly stated, because this is, I'm not saying this happens frequently, but there is plenty of leeway in circuit court for how revocations and how sentences are actually imposed and whether or not time just somehow disappears or doesn't disappear. I'm not saying this is the only time this case has occurred. This is the only time that I know of, in my experience, has come up on appeal, at least with me being involved in it. But I just think that what we have here is something that's just basic to the jurisprudence of this country. We have a right to depend on the order and to say, okay, this is what it is. I now look at 11 years. The whole idea of my notice and all that, I think that's critical, that in any event, he doesn't get notice. Even if I'm wrong on void ab initio, on notice, he needs to be given notice. You're coming back on a revocation in which you face 11 years. Forget about what the order says. It's 11 years you face, not 11 months. Would that change what happens in a revocation hearing? I don't know. I just know that the law requires that some reasonable notice be given. The statute requires that. And implicit in notice is that I have to know the consequences of what's happening to me. When I am arrested or indicted, I know the charge, and the charge carries with it on paper what I'm looking as a possible punishment. Here, he doesn't have anything other than the order of July of 13, which says 11 months. Is there no other questions?
Hearing none, we thank you, sir. In light of the fact that you were provided this morning for the first time for this the Robertson versus Warden case, if there's something there that you wish to call to our attention, you may do so by letter within 4 days of today.
Thank you very much,
but that's your option.
Thank you.
And in keeping with our tradition, we'll come down and greet counsel, and then we will take a 30-minute recess before we're coming back and continuing with the Stackfield case.
All rise.